All right, today we're looking at Philippians chapter 2, starting at verse 5, and we're going to be looking at this very special and very important passage, which is in many ways like a hymn. Many scholars believe that this is a hymn of the early church that Paul included, like a piece of their liturgy, maybe like a creed that they used to talk about Jesus. And it is just full of Christology. So it's really one of the most important passages about who Jesus is, what he did from a theological standpoint. So we're going to talk about this today and see what it says, what it doesn't say. And then, of course, remember that Paul put it smack dab in the middle of chapter 2 of the book of Philippians. And so it fits into a context, too, so we have to think about why it's there and what he's trying to do with it. So let's get on with it. Someone read for us verses 5 through 11.
Your attitude should be the same as that of Jesus Christ, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father.
All right, there it is. Okay, now before we dig into this, I do need to mention that next week I'm out of town, and so we're not going to have our meeting next week. So you can sleep in, you can gain some strength so that when we come back, we can talk about not doing everything without grumbling, right? Which is verse 12. So, okay.
Are you going to be in O'Hare?
No, not at all. Flying south. So.
I recommend Southwest. Hobby was very nice and laid back.
Okay, good to know. All right, here we go. So, we'll deal with this issue of have this mindset. We talked a little bit about it last time. We're to have the same attitude as Jesus. And so let's get into verse 6. Jesus. So we're talking about Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing. Let's pause there. That's the first section and really deals with Jesus. What do we learn from this? Let's talk a little bit about what we see in this passage or this verse, really, verse 6 and 7.
There's different interpretations of the word nature.
Okay.
Some, it's the form of, or again, being God. Being the same as nature and form and being as God.
Okay, so some people try to play around with these words a little bit, but when we look at the text, it's pretty clear. Being in very nature God, he was the same nature as God, right? He was God, he is God, and he was with God. So it kind of ties in with another very famous hymn, which is the beginning of the book of John, right?
Right. And the Word was God.
Yeah, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. God, so there's this unity.
Beginning with him. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's this unity between the Father and the Son in their very nature.
Could this be a counter to Gnosticism?
Yeah, I mean, remember, Gnosticism isn't in full-blown at this point, but there's the beginnings of those things are happening.
The beginnings of the heresies, because Paul does talk a lot about false teaching and bad teaching, so if he's quoting this, if it's an early creed, it's obviously being formed for a particular thing.
Right.
You don't
usually sit down and write these things unless there's something that needs to be clarified.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, remember, creeds are for teaching as well. They're for teaching new believers, and they're also for teaching children, right? Mm-hmm. The basic doctrines and beliefs of the faith. A lot of people didn't read, and so these kinds of things were repeated over and over again in the context of the worship of church so that you would drill into them the very heart of the gospel, the truth of Christianity. And so one of the things at the very heart of this is that Jesus was of the same nature as God. He is God, okay? And we also have this sense of Jesus' preexistence, right? This is prior to his incarnation. Mm-hmm. And so this is establishing that idea that Jesus existed at the same, you know, preexisted his birth. Jesus wasn't created at birth. He wasn't created equal with God. He was with God. He was of the very nature of God. And he did not now this is where things get interesting. Okay? So he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. If you remember in the King James, something to be used to his own advantage. What are we talking about here?
All the various things he did in the way of miracles and this, that, and the other were to not to advance him. He didn't get any more money out of it. He didn't get any, you know, anything personally. Yet he healed people because they were needing to be healed.
Right.
And so on and so forth. And what he talked about and what he said and so on. And he wasn't taking any money. He didn't pass the plate after his sermons.
Really?
Well, yeah. He often even said, "Don't tell anybody."
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we see this reflected.
Which is a wonderful way to make sure it gets spread all over.
So we see this reflected in Jesus' attitude during his ministry, right? But this is talking about him in heaven, right?
Could this be?
What's that?
He didn't have to come to earth.
He didn't have to come to earth.
Could this be a reference to Lucifer, who considered grasping God's authority?
Well, it's certainly in contrast to that,
yeah.
Right? Jesus doesn't want to hold on. He doesn't feel it necessary to hold on to the position that he has. He lets go of that in order to do the will of the Father. So we see this attitude of sacrifice even in Jesus' preexistence, right? Just the very nature of his incarnation was an incredible sacrifice for Jesus. Right, that's what it says. Rather, he made himself nothing. Now, the word is actually emptied. Okay? Kanao. The Greek word for empty. What does that mean? What did Jesus... This is a great theological question that, you know, books have been written on. What did Jesus empty himself of?
His godly power.
Okay.
I mean, because honestly, I mean, this is all about free will.
All right.
I mean, it's God, like Jesus said. He could have made a perfect world from the very get-go, where everything was just raindrops and roses and flying unicorns.
That's right.
Somehow, universe God probably likes to sit and watch things play out. I don't know. I mean, go back and look at the world, the book of Job. I mean, they're bebopping through the universe, and he bumps into Satan, and they look down at Job. So, I mean, who knows how God thinks? I mean, it's if he wanted it to be perfect, it would have been perfect.
Right.
So he's tying his hand behind his back. He's down there seeing how this is all going to play out and let mankind make its own decisions.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, there's an element of, I think, of bringing mankind into this. But I think let's focus on Jesus, because Jesus is going to, I think you're right, he, in essence, ties his hands behind his back, right? And in what way? What are the things that Jesus lets go of?
He doesn't look like God. He looks like a man.
Okay.
So he's emptied himself of things that would make him look like, you know, we'd say, ha ha, there's God, instead of there's Dan, you know.
Right. So God is a spirit, right? And as a spirit, he has certain attributes, certain what we call non-communicable attributes, right? Things that don't pass on to us. And those are like his omnipotence and his omnipresence and those kinds of things, right? And those are exactly the things that Jesus sets aside for a time, right? Because Jesus comes down to earth and he becomes a man. And so he steps away from his ability to create worlds and do all the things that he used to do in heaven. He set that all aside to take on the confines of human existence. And in essence, he also gave up some of his omniscience, right? Because God knows all and sees all, but Jesus limited that willfully because then he doesn't see. He said, I mean, Jesus, by his own word, says, you know, there are things that the Son of Man doesn't know, right? Yeah, only the Father.
It's all gonna end.
Right.
And
he said, not even the Son of Man knows that. So Jesus limited his understanding of that because before he didn't know it, because it was with a very nature God, right? And now he has limited. So Jesus empties himself of certain attributes for a period of time in order to take on human flesh. Well, that's a huge sacrifice, right? It is. This is what Paul wants us to see. This is what he wants us to understand about Jesus, and about God's plan from the very beginning. It was about giving up for humanity. Giving up for the will of God and the purpose of God, even what Jesus held as God, right? It didn't make him less God. As a matter of fact, I think it makes him more God, right?
And he gives us a perfect example of asking God for guidance, for wisdom, and for timing, and all that, because he does that.
Exactly, right. He throws himself completely on the mercy of God the Father. And it just shows that interconnectedness between God and the Father and the Son. A complete and total trust being for us an example of how to completely trust in God for our lives and for guidance and all of those things. So he makes himself... he empties himself. I like the word he empties himself rather than he makes himself nothing. Now let's go on. By taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. Let's pause there. What do we see there?
Well, you start in 6. He has the nature of God.
Right.
Now... he takes the nature of a servant or a slave. So you've gone from the pinnacle of existence to the bottom.
Exactly.
It's incomprehensible.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's kind of graph this a little bit. We got Jesus. Okay, so this is all Jesus. And he is unity with God. That's pretty cool, right? And then he says, to keep all these attributes of God, that's okay, it's wonderful, but I'm willing to give them up. And what does he do?
Becomes a servant.
He empties himself.
There's a note in my Bible that says that he... represents the opposite of the human drive to dominate.
Okay. So he empties himself and he becomes a man, right? Takes on the nature of man. Becomes a man. Now, Jesus could have done this. He could have become a man, and he could have been the greatest man, right? He could have become the king of the greatest empire, right, on the face of the earth, with all of the wealth, and all, and it still would have been an incredible step down from where he was, right? But he didn't do that. He came as a baby, but he wasn't born into a palace, right? He's born into what? He's born into poverty. And the word here is literally slave. So just as we're talking about here, he takes on, he goes from the height of heights all the way down to the bottom of the human strata, right, of society, to become, as David said, a slave, okay? Now, think about this in terms of the Philippians. The Philippians are Roman citizens, okay? For them, status is very important, right? Because there are Romans, and then there are Greeks. And then there are barbarians. And then there are slaves. Right? Jesus didn't become, they are here. Jesus became this. Okay? And so they would have understood this. We, you know, we're not as stratified. I need to talk more raise it. We're not as stratified as a society, right? We pride ourselves as being more egalitarian. And in many ways we are than a lot of societies in our world. Think of India and places like that where you have rigid caste systems. The ancient world was much more rigid in their social structure than we are. We have, you know, upward mobility. I mean, we glorify the person who starts out as a worker and becomes the industrialist and becomes the richest man in the country. And we're like, yes, that's the American dream. That's what it's all about, right? We glorify that. Other countries don't glorify that. You know, you can make all kinds of money, but you'll never get into the upper strata of society. That's never going to happen. Right? And that's more the way it was in the ancient world. And so this kind of a dissension was particularly powerful for these people in Philippi. Okay, for the ancient world, and especially the Philippians. All right, good. So he becomes a slave. Now, let's talk about what else happens. Taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. Next, it says he humbled himself. Okay, so not only that, he's not only become a slave, he could have been a happy slave, right? In a nice house, like Joseph was, in the house of Potiphar. That still would have brought him to here. But no, that wasn't good enough, right? Jesus has to humble himself even more. Even more he humbles himself. And what is that humility? Where does that take him? He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death. Okay? So he subjects himself to death. This is somebody who is in the very nature of God. He's eternal. And he didn't deserve death, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus didn't deserve death because he never did anything wrong. And death is the punishment for sin. And he was sinless. And so he didn't deserve to die. But yet he humbled himself to the point that he accepts death. Now, he could have died of old age. He could have lived to a ripe old age of, you know, 99 years old or 127 or whatever, and then just kind of gone into sleep. And that would have been a lot to subject himself to death because he didn't deserve death. But it was, he was an eternal being.
It was even more. He had the death of a criminal.
Yeah, we're getting there. Right? But it would have been enough, what I'm saying. It would have been enough just to die. That would have been enough of a sacrifice, right? But no. He takes the worst kind of death. Right, Joy? The death of a cross. How does that play in Philippi? Among Roman citizens. Roman citizens don't get crucified. Roman citizens don't get crucified. That was saved for slaves and for barbarians.
Criminals.
And traitors, treasonous people. That's the only way a Roman could ever get even considered to be crucified. They were killed in, even as a criminal, the Apostle Paul was probably executed by getting his head chopped off, which is much more merciful, right?
Yes.
Than being crucified. Crucifixion is the worst kind of death. So do you see the progression? Okay. And when you start to graph it out, and any one of these points, any one of these steps is an incredible sacrifice. Okay, for Jesus, unity with God, to empty himself in any way, to give up any aspect of his nature of godnessness, is an incredible sacrifice. But then to become a man, to become a created human being, are you kidding me? That would have been enough, and he could have been a king. But he becomes a slave. Are you kidding me? He becomes a slave. At least he could have been a happy slave. No. But he humbles himself and subjects himself to death. And not any kind of death. Death on the cross. So it's really a very powerful picture of what Jesus does for us, isn't it?
Well, I think Peggy touched on it. This idea, this contrast of you have the creator of the universe at the top, you go literally to the bottom of existence, of humanity. And we have that the original sin really is pride.
Right.
That's the basis of all sin. We think we have this self-worth. We can do things, work, make whatever it is. And so we think we're all that. Here we have God, it just like empties. There is no pride. It's all about the Father.
Right. Absolutely.
This is the very opposite of what Adam and Eve did. They desired to be like God, knowing good and evil, so they wanted to elevate, and Jesus
exactly.
Does the very opposite. He humbles himself. He doesn't elevate, doesn't grasp.
I mean,
right.
God says
himself.
He will share his glory with no one.
Right. Right.
It's God.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to do the same. Empty ourselves to die to ourselves.
Absolutely.
That he's just the example. This is what everyone needs to do. Exalt God, become nothing in ourselves.
Right. Right. Become obedient. This is the ultimate expression of obedience and humility. Obedience and humility. Satan, as Peggy said, tried to exalt himself. I will exalt my stars above the stars of God. No, not going to happen. Adam and Eve in the garden, what did they say? If we eat of this fruit, we will
be like God.
Right? Mm-hmm. Sin is trying to go the other direction. But Jesus demonstrates exactly the opposite. Okay? And he's going down. And then what happens? Therefore, verse 9, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue can confess or acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. So we have then all of a sudden this radical exaltation, right? Mm-hmm. So from the point of death, Jesus is then exalted back to unity with God. And given a name. What is the name above all names? What is the name that he's given?
Jesus.
Well, this was the name he had.
But in the end, it says he has a name that written that only he knows.
Yeah, there's in Revelation, there's a lot about kind of secret names and all these things. But I think it's Lord. It's Kyrios, right, is the Greek word. He is the ultimate Lord. He is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the God of Gods, right? He has been exalted to a place, and God has given him this name. So where he had emptied himself before, he is now filled up again with a place of position and authority. That seems to be maybe even higher than it was before, right? How do you get higher than God, right? But in God's economy, we don't know exactly how that works, but God honors him in this way and gives him this name because of his demonstration of humility and obedience in this decline.
Well, he gave him a name that produced an effect that had never occurred before in all of time. Every name, everything that can be named will bow. Right. This has not happened to this point.
Right.
Until he got that name that's literally above death, fear, poverty, hell, grave, that name is higher than anything else ever been named, and though all those names will kneel and confess that he is Lord, this has never happened. I mean, they were all walking in heaven and they were warring, you know. Now, because it says everyone will kneel, everything, every being, everything will kneel.
Right, exactly. So let's talk about this kneeling stuff. Okay, everybody's going to kneel. That's clear. Are they all? Is everyone going to kneel willingly?
No. I don't think so.
Is everybody going to go, oh?
No.
Okay. I think some people take it this way, right? The universalist is going to say, yeah, everybody's going to come to that place where eventually they're going to kneel to Jesus. Whether it's on this earth or when they die, they're going to realize, oh, yeah, well, Jesus is Lord. Okay, good. No, I don't think that's what it means. I don't think the rest of the Bible bears that out. I think there's going to be those of us who kneel willingly, right, who fall on the rock and we get broken, and then others that the rock falls on them, right, and crushes them to powder. There's going to be a forced kneeling of those who have been subjugated, right? Because of their rebellion. Their rebellion has been broken.
We've seen in our lifetime a lot of opposition to God. When we were all children, it was not that evident. There were, people...
not that evident.
Feared
about Hitler?
Feared and respected God, well... Mm. But In
every generation...
The culture's changed so much.
In every generation.
Well, didn't Hitler in some warped way think he was honoring God by killing the Jews or something?
No, he was just an idiot.
Yeah. He's insane.
Well, think about this for a moment, right? Is Satan omniscient? Is Satan all-knowing?
No.
Okay. Does he know when the end will come?
No.
So what does that mean? In every generation, there must be an Antichrist. The spirit of Antichrist exists in every generation. It's God's the one who starts the play clock on the end, right? And that could have happened at any point. In every generation, there is some figure that could fulfill that prophetic, like, if God were to say, okay, now's the end. There's somebody that's already been born, that's already been eviling it up, right? Who could be the Antichrist. And so we see this movement against God, this rebellion against God in every generation. We see it all the time. But that will all be broken at this time. Every knee will bow. Every knee will bow to Christ. There will be no holdouts at the end. This is such an important passage. It's such an important passage theologically, right? Because it establishes some really important doctrines about Jesus, right? Number one, that he preexisted, right? That he wasn't some guy that was good, and he was so good that God said, you know what? You're going to be the Messiah. I'm going to anoint you with the Spirit. I mean, that's a heresy. That's one of the things that people struggled with. Was Jesus just a really great man that God put his Spirit upon? And the answer is no, because he was of very nature God. He existed with God beforehand.
He was the Word of God.
He was the Word of God, right? And so we see that here. It's substantiated here. But yet we see this willingness on Jesus' part to lay it all aside. Not all of it. He doesn't give up his God nature, right? He's still of nature God. You can't change your nature. But then he takes on an additional nature. And so we see this idea of this dual nature of Jesus, the nature of God and the nature of a man coming together in the incarnation. We see it here expressed.
What's that Greek word that means he's of the same substance with God, the one they argued over when they were
homostasis
putting together the Nicene Creed?
Yeah, homostasis, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that.
So, and he's really a man. You know, one of the other heresies is that he was just like a really elaborate ghost, right? No. I mean, this was one of the things that the Greeks debated about, because it was like, how could God actually become a man? Because they saw human flesh as just so much more inferior than the perfection of God. So how could God become a man? That's just inconceivable. So Jesus wasn't really God. He was really just like a ghost. He was like a hologram that walked the earth. And then, you know, so he hung on the cross and he died, but he wasn't really human, okay? No, he was human. He took on the nature of man, the nature of a servant, the likeness of human flesh, the appearance of man, and he humbled himself, becoming obedient to death.
I don't think it was the Gnostics, but some group that was called something that thought that he was... Was it real? Was that the Gnostics, or was it another?
The Arians.
Arians.
Yeah, they're just all these early heresies, right? And it's all these things trying to justify who in the heck is Jesus? How did this actually work, right? And these passages are really, really important to that. And then our modern world says, well, he was really just a man, and he didn't really die. You know, he fainted. Yeah. It was blood loss and... They put him in a tomb in the cold, revived him in the tomb, you know, and he woke up. And he didn't really raise from the dead. He passed out. Okay? No. He became obedient to death. He died. Okay? So all of these things are really important that are being established for us. And then, of course, Jesus' exaltation. So... we've been hitting around this quite a bit. Now let's go back to verse 5. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. So, now let's get down to practical nuts and bolts. How does this affect the way that we live?
Kind of like 20, 30, 40 years ago, there was a popular thing going around of what would Jesus do? And we talked about that in Sunday schools and things like that. But that's what the real issue for us to do is, we've got a bad decision to make. Think about, what would Jesus do?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It becomes real easy what the decision is. Of course, it's also easy to say, well, I'd really rather do this.
That's right. Well, in order to know what would Jesus do, we got to know what Jesus did, right? So understanding who Jesus was is foundational to that. And that's exactly what Paul is doing here, is he's laying out the extent of what Jesus did so that we can emulate Jesus in our lives. What else? What are some of the essential characteristics of...
Well, he washed the feet of his disciples, which was... Again, this Peter thought this was just cannot happen because he's God. But he's trying to say, no, there is no pride in being this. You have to be a servant. He says, whoever wants to be first, they're going to be last. But the last, the least,
right,
will be the greatest.
Right.
That you have to forget about yourself. There is no self. It's about everyone else.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you look at that passage, you mentioned John chapter 13, when Jesus washes the disciples' feet, it says that Jesus comes into the feast, right? And he gets up from his place, and he takes off his cloak and he wraps a towel around himself. He takes off his cloak and he wraps a towel around himself, takes on the position of a slave, right? And he takes out the implements of a slave and he comes and he washes the feet of his disciples, humbled himself. And the disciples are like, you can't do this. And Jesus is like, you have no idea. I already have, and I'm about to go into DEFCON 5 here. I'm about to go into the final steps of this. And so I think that exactly that act of Jesus is an illustration of this very decline, this very pathway that Jesus has taken. How does it affect the way that we treat one another? What is the source of most of our problems with other people?
They're dumb.
Okay.
That's what came with.
Touche.
I'm trying to get two shots.
Yeah, get two shots, please.
One for your back and one for your pride.
I think it's our wanting our own way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to do things my way. You have violated my rights, right? Okay? This is mine, and you took it away, and it belongs to me, and I have every right to have it, right? I'm driving down the road, and you cut me off. This is my lane. I was in the correct position. You got in my way. You're wrong. I'm right. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, these are the things that affect our relationship with one another. We're not willing to give up what is rightfully ours. Because I have every right to have it, right? We're very justice-oriented. At least justice as it works out in our own minds, right? Which usually works to our favor.
That's right.
If you weren't so dumb, you'd think the way I do.
Exactly. Right. Okay? So there's a sense of superiority. You add all of these things together, and then you look at that in comparison with what Jesus did, who willingly emptied himself of his right to be unified with God, gave up willingly his equalness, his equality with God, right? And those attributes of God that made him unlimited, he limits himself He takes on a position of service, and he becomes obedient to the point of death. Obedient to God, not to others, but to God in order to serve others. He becomes a slave. Okay? You can't be in conflict with other people if you're trying to serve them.
Can you tell Congress that?
If you take if you take the position of a servant, it completely changes. I mean, completely changes the dynamic of human relationships. And this is what Paul is hammering at. Okay? He's been trying to show that through his own example of sacrifice, being imprisoned for the good of others, even saying, I could die and that would be better for me. But I have decided to continue to live in this terrible place and endure all of the pain and suffering that I'm enduring in prison and everything that's going to follow for your sake. Because I'm trying to follow this pattern of Jesus. Be easier to go to heaven. Far better. But I'm going to stay for you. Right? Not for me. For you. Yes?
Well, he starts the whole chapter by telling us how to do this, and then he explains how Jesus did it.
Right.
I mean, we just go back to the beginning of the chapter.
Exactly.
And tells us exactly how to do it.
Exactly. Putting others' interests in front of our own. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is the ultimate example of that. So, all right. Again, we could spend years on this. There's years here to be spent. But yet, this is Jesus, right? This is the depth of who it is. And I think, you know, we look at this and we say, okay, I understand the incarnation and I understand Jesus' death on the cross. And the issue is that we'll never understand it until we completely understand God, right? We'll get to heaven and we're going to see heaven and we're going to go, you gave up this? You stepped away from this to become a man? To be born in a stable? To die on a cross? To have a cell phone that beeps in the middle of a lesson? You gave all of this up, right? And the depth of Jesus' death and the depth of Jesus' incarnation and the plan of salvation is something that is going to be eternally revealed to us. There's no end to this, to understanding this. It's going to become greater and greater and greater as we understand more completely who God is, we'll become more confused about how Jesus actually did this, right?
So, well, too, he was the ultimate sacrifice. He was the sacrificial lamb.
Yes, mm-hmm. Indeed.
And the fulfillment of what happened in the Old Testament.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep, yep. All right. We'll pause it there.